And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, part of the Athletic NBA show. We're really glad to have you guys here with us. Make sure you go to theathletic.com/NBA show to get The Athletic for $1 a month. You got to. With me, as always, is my good friend Alex Spears. And Alex, tell us what happened in the NBA this week.
Well, Andrew, the week began, as it always does, last Friday night, which was ring night for Danny Green and Dwight Howard as they returned to L.A. to play the Lakers. Danny Green hit 9 threes in the game, which, as StatMuse pointed out, is more than any Laker has made in a game this season. In other Danny Green news, he also sent a signed jersey to a 94-year-old grandmother who became an NBA and Danny Green fan during the pandemic. Everyone agreed it was nice and good. On Saturday night, it seemed like all hope was lost for the Sacramento Kings, who were on a 3-game winning streak. Up by 1 on the Cavs with 6 seconds left, Rashawn Holmes was called for a goaltending on a coast-to-coast layup attempt by Colin Sexton. Devastating. With only 1.6 seconds remaining, the only option left was for De'Aaron Fox to throw a perfect length of the court pass to Harrison Barnes, who hit the game-winning 3 at the buzzer. The Kings have now won 7 of their last 9. On Sunday, we found out that 7-time All-Star LaMarcus Aldridge was going to sign with the Brooklyn Nets. It is either a completely meaningless signing of another washed vet, or the end of the NBA as we know it. Stay tuned to find out which is correct. On Monday night, Russell Westbrook put up 35 points, 14 rebounds, and 21 assists in a win against the Pacers, the first 35-10-20 game in NBA history. The NBA community celebrated the amazing achievement and all agreed it was cool. I'm just kidding. We talked about Stephen A. for 3 days. On Tuesday night, the Orlando Magic, who traded away their 3 best players last week, beat the Los Angeles Clippers, which was the first of 2 wins this week for the Magic. That's right. The Orlando Magic, starring Chuma Okeke, won as many games in the last week as they had in the previous month. On Wednesday night, number 1 overall pick and Rookie of the Year candidate Anthony Edwards scored 11 of his 24 points in the final 8 minutes to help the Timberwolves overcome a 12-point fourth quarter deficit and beat the New York Knicks and former Timberwolves coach Tom Thibodeau. And finally, Andrew, on Thursday night, it was a rematch of last year's epic 3-1 comeback, or 3-1 collapse if you prefer, between the Nuggets and the Clippers. The new look Nuggets featuring Aaron Gordon outlasted a late Clippers charge to win 101-94 and move into a tie with the Los Angeles Lakers in the standings. What a week it was, Andrew.
What a week. Post-trade deadline. Really, all the transaction stuff seemed to be over. But Alex, this week we had some interesting things, and one of them was the buyout market, and specifically the outcries from small markets, Alex. We know a thing or two about small markets.
We're
connoisseurs of small markets.
That's
and
right.
I just want to know, is this a small market problem? Are the buyouts a small market problem? So we look, Howard Beck wrote this piece about it being a small market problem. And this is from a small market GM. The system is flawed. You shouldn't be adding to your team this deep in the season without giving things up. So there's clearly lots of strange feelings about buyouts and small market, large market. And there's also tons of disadvantages that come with being in a small market. We acknowledge that. If you listen to Down to Dunk, we talk about it almost all the time. But my question, Alex, are buyouts really one of the disadvantages? So let's take a look. Even this season, you have Drummond, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, Lakers, Nets, Nets. All big markets. This is where
big names.
This is where all the crying is coming from. Now, there were three other buyouts. Obviously, these are not bigger names, but Austin Rivers and Jeff Teague joined the Bucks. Gorgui Dieng joined the Spurs. Would you say that those three, like, is the impact that much bigger from Drummond, Blake Griffin, and LaMarcus than it is from Austin Rivers, Jeff Teague, and Gorgui Dieng? Obviously, like, Gorgui Dieng is lower on the list. But, like, Austin Rivers and Jeff Teague are probably going to play for the Bucks. Yes?
They probably are. I mean, those first three names, the benefit of those guys specifically, it feels like, is in the regular season because both of those teams, the Nets and the Lakers, have been dealing with a ton of injuries. So maybe they're more impactful for that reason. But yeah, once we get to the playoffs, it's kind of a wash for me. I mean, I would give the edge to that Drummond, Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge group. But like you said, I actually think Austin Rivers is a really nice pickup for the Bucks.
I know. Austin Rivers might play playoff minutes for the Bucks, and you can't guarantee that with any of the other guys. I mean, I'm sure Drummond will play for the Lakers, but in the closing minutes, is there a chance that he's on the court for the Lakers?
I mean, I'd hope not.
I mean, probably not.
If he is, the Lakers probably aren't winning the championship.
Right. So I went through all the buyout guys from the last decade and thought, okay, a lot of people are saying like buyout guys have no impact at all. Some people are saying like, this is crazy. The large markets are taking over. This is unfair. So like, which is it? Because it feels like we're either on one side or the other. So I went through and looked at the top five best buyout guys of the last decade. One of the best in 2012 was Derek Fisher. A guy who chose the number 37 because that was his age, and he wanted to put his age on his jersey.
That's cool.
Yeah. Fun fact, the Thunder outbid the Miami Heat in this buyout, which is wild. Big market, small market. Who won? The small market won. Wow. Okay. Scott Brooks said he has winner all over his DNA. You can never have enough winners in your locker room, and we have a locker room full of them. He just gives us one more winner, and possibly the cheesiest quote about winning ever.
Great Scott Brooks quote.
He played 22 minutes per game for that Thunder team that went to the NBA Finals and was helpful to them in spots and unhelpful to them in other spots, but he's 37 years old, but chose to go to a small market. Next one, Boris Diaw, 2012, same year. Gets bought out by the Bobcats, mostly because he was unproductive. He was unsatisfied with being there. He'd put on a ton of weight. But after he was waived, Tony Parker stepped up and said, he's in shape. He said, I'm the first one to make fun of him when he gains too much weight. But right now, it's not the case. We're very interested to get him. And I remember it just being kind of a foregone conclusion he was going to join the Spurs back then. And right. It didn't seem like he was going to make that big of an impact because he had been so bad with them. But he went on to play 4 years with the Spurs, which is unusual for a buyout. Derek Fisher did end up rejoining the Thunder. He had made like a pit stop with the Mavs and then ended up joining the Thunder again. And one thing you see is it's highly unusual for guys to be on teams that they get bought out or teams that they join after a buyout and remain on that team for consecutive years. But Diaw was on that team for 4 years, helped them win a title. He averaged 9.5 and almost 3.5 assists in the playoffs in the 2014 run. Pivotal player. Maybe they don't become the exact same team without him. He was very helpful.
I think he's like the all-time buyout guy. I think I would put him number one.
Yeah, probably so.
Because he really did play an important role on that team.
Yeah. Everybody loves to think about P.J. Brown. Like, number one, P.J. Brown was not bought out. He was a free agent signing
right.
to the 08 Celtics, so he doesn't really even qualify for this list. But a lot of people think of him. But you're right. I think Boris Diaw is easily the best guy on this list. 2013, Birdman, Chris Anderson, signed by the Miami Heat. He hadn't played in 10 months because he was recovering from a knee injury. He was waived by the Denver Nuggets. He ended up playing 15 minutes per game on that title team. He supplanted Joel Anthony in the rotation and played a big role for that Heat team in 2013. So, helpful player, rotation guy, nothing crazy. 2018, we have the Ersan Ilyasova, Marco Bellinelli duo. They were the 6th and 7th men off the bench for the 76ers. They just needed shooting. They needed somebody to help space the floor for Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. They averaged like quite a bit of points, like over 20 points per game combined together in the playoffs, and helped them get to the second round, which for these teams that are kind of fighting, these young teams that are fighting, that's helpful. And they got them for nothing. Large market benefited in both of these last two. And then this is one that I think people forget about, and forget that he was a buyout guy and forget how impactful he was. But it's Enes Kanter in 2019. He was bought out by the Knicks and signed with the Blazers. The Blazers actually signed him to that big offer sheet back in 2015.
Right, yeah.
That everybody said was a horrible, horrible contract. So he was pursued by the Lakers that year too. Large market, small market beats the large market. And then in January, when he was still with the Knicks, he was told that he was going to start in a game against the Houston Rockets. This was told to Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic. Instead, he just didn't play at all. So large market, mistreating player that goes to small market. There's just all kinds of strange trends here. But Kanter said when that happened, he said, what they're doing is to me is pretty messed up. I deserve better. And he got better. He went to a small market in the Blazers. He averaged 11.4 points per game, 9.7 rebounds per game. He played 28 minutes per game, helped them get to the conference finals. He had to go through Steven Adams and Nikola Jokic and ended up helping the Blazers get to the conference finals. A huge deal for the Blazers. If they didn't have him, they don't get there. It's pretty wild to think about.
In particular, that first round matchup against the Thunder that year. I mean, it was crazy at the time, but he dominated Steven Adams. He just clearly outplayed Steven Adams.
He did, which we thought was going to be an advantage for the Thunder heading into that series, and we were dead wrong. A huge, huge boon for the Blazers. Other notable pickups on the buyout market this last season, you had Jeff Green with the Rockets, helped them get to round two. He was very helpful for them against the Thunder. And then Markieff Morris was on the championship Lakers, and he played a pretty small role for them. Also notable in 2012, and I didn't include these guys just because it seems strange, but all three of these guys went and played in China during the NBA lockout and came back and were signed basically as free agents, almost seeming like kind of similar to a buyout, but it was J.R. Smith, Patty Mills, and Wilson Chandler, Knicks, Spurs, Nuggets. So mostly small markets in that as well.
So can I ask you a question? Because big picture, I think mm-hmm. we both agree that like the uproar about the big markets taking all the buyout guys isn't very convincing. And I would agree with that. Are you sympathetic at all to the more general argument against the buyout market, that it's kind of just generally unfair for a team to be able to sign a guy who is, in this case, especially this year, making a lot of money? They don't have to give up anything for him other than a roster spot. It's basically bringing him on a vet minimum contract. They don't have to send out any picks or whatsoever. They just get to add that player. Is that a good system in and of itself?
It's really not. But at the end of the day, it's not just to benefit the player. It's not just to benefit these large markets. These teams decide to buy them out. These right. small in a lot of in almost all these cases, smaller market teams that wish that they were worse so they can go get better picks are doing it. And I don't feel sympathetic to it. And I don't think that it's anything to be uproarious about, because there are so many guys that get bought out that make zero impact whatsoever. So one, it helps these teams that want to get off these giant contracts. It helps them save money on their contracts. And then generally, it doesn't really help. I mean, the guys that we're talking about, like the top guys, like Derek Fisher, he was impactful, but like he's the eighth guy on that team, ninth guy on that team? Boris Diaw is like the exception, okay? Like Birdman, backup big guy. You can go find another backup big. Irsan Ilyasova, Marco Bellinelli, they were helpful in that circumstance. They didn't like go on to win a title or anything, but they were helpful. And then Enes Kanter is also maybe an exception as well, because he started for that team, played almost 30 minutes a game. Everybody else is not super impactful. And to prove that point, I'm going to go through a list of 13 names of guys that have been bought out from 2012. You're just going to tell me who they were signed by after they were released. No. In 2012, Gilbert Arenas signed with what team?
2012? Gilbert Arenas?
Yeah.
Oh, no, Andrew. The tables have turned.
The tables have turned.
So it's not the Magic. He would have left the Magic.
Yeah,
I have no idea who Gilbert Arenas played for.
The Grizzlies. Okay. You're going to have to give me quick answers on these. Okay. Andrew, 2014, Andrew Bynum.
Pacers?
Pacers is correct. Small market. Danny Granger, 2014.
Houston? I don't know.
It's the Clippers. No one remembers. 2014, Caron Butler. You should know this one.
Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oklahoma City Thunder, small market. Amari Stoudemire, 2015.
Amari Stoudemire, 2015. No idea. Oh,
Mavericks. Mavericks. No one remembers. Mavericks. Michael Beasley, 2015.
Did he go back to the Heat?
He went back to the Heat. That's right. Kendrick Perkins, 2015, after being bought out by the Jazz.
The Cavs.
Cavs is correct. 2016, David Lee.
Milwaukee? No idea.
No, Mavericks. Darren Williams. Mavericks. 2017, Darren Williams.
That was Mavericks, right?
No, Mavericks Cavaliers. 2018, Derrick Rose.
2018, Derrick Rose. Pistons?
Nope, Timberwolves. 2019, Pau Gasol.
Okay, I know this one. Bucks.
Bucks is correct. Yes. The point is, no one remembers any of this because it couldn't have been more meaningless. Those are all some of the biggest named buyout guys. And I promise you, we'll do a quiz like this in 5 years. And I will say LaMarcus Aldridge. And you will say, I don't know.
No, not now. Because I'll be prepared.
No one knows. And you certainly should stop caring. Okay. There's very few of these guys that make an impact. And if they do, it's typically like role player type of guys. Enes Kanter, not a star. Like, stop being up in arms about these star players that are on their last leg that go to a big market. Like, stop it. Because it just doesn't work. It has never really worked. And by the way, if you were keeping track of those 13 teams, 7 of those were small markets, 6 were big markets. So, in conclusion, this is not a small market issue. This is just a bad team issue.
It's a bad team issue. It's also a big name issue because big names get people excited. And looking ahead, Andrew, I was looking at Hoops Hype, highest salaries in 2 years. I think we have the potential to have some big name buyout guys because that is the last year of Russell Westbrook, John Wall, and Kevin Love. You can imagine a scenario where those teams are going in other directions at that point. We might get another scenario like this.
That's right. Why don't everybody preemptively freak out about all these guys? Like, go ahead.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, so now it is time for my most interesting thing of the week, which is the post-deadline Denver Nuggets. They are 3-0 since Aaron Gordon entered the starting lineup. Actually, 13-3 in their last 16, so they were doing pretty well before. All the wins in this last week were over playoff teams, Atlanta, the Sixers, and the Clippers on Thursday night. In the 64 minutes that the new starting lineup has played together, they have a plus 37.9 net rating. It's 64 minutes, but these are against some pretty good defenses. Philly, second-ranked defense. The Clippers, 12th-ranked defense. Atlanta. Okay, so Aaron Gordon's fit with the Nuggets has been so seamless. And and kind of what blows me away is that last Friday, when I opened my podcast app, you know, every NBA pod is doing their post-trade deadline show. And I don't know if I heard one person who didn't love the Aaron Gordon fit with the Denver Nuggets and didn't see big things coming. And it turns out every single person was right because it was such an obvious fit. I mean, he went from a place in Orlando where he was either being asked to be, you know, the primary scorer or the secondary scorer at worst. And now he's on a team where maybe he's the fourth scorer behind Jokic, Murray, and MPJ. So there are a few things that have stuck out over this past week about why this fit is so seamless. One is the defensive versatility. So the Nuggets are currently the 16th ranked defense, which actually is kind of interesting because that is the exact same as they were last year, despite losing, you know, Torrey Craig, Jeremy Grant, Mason Plumlee. In the past, the Nuggets were always either relying on defenders who were less versatile or guys who were going to hurt you offensively. So guys like Gary Harris and Torrey Craig, or maybe Paul Millsap wasn't quick enough to stay with wings, or Jeremy Grant, who is probably their best option that they've had at that kind of perimeter defender role. But it's clear to me already that Aaron Gordon is a significant upgrade there. Because just in the last three games this week, we've seen him match up with John Collins, Trae Young, Ben Simmons, Kawhi Leonard. There was a point in the Atlanta Hawks game where Trae Young got matched up on Aaron Gordon and did not even attempt to go by him. Just immediately stopped dribbling and passed the ball to someone else. And then in that game against the Clippers, his defense on Kawhi was pretty impressive. Kawhi was a minus 14 in that game, worst on the Clippers. And he had, you know, a decent scoring night. He was 24-12. But Gordon was with him all throughout that game. And it kind of culminated in this really nice block on Kawhi. And I think what he brings defensively is he just simplifies their defensive game plan, because you know that whoever the best scorer is on the other team every single night, well, you just put Aaron Gordon on him and just kind of forget about it. And then on the offensive side, he also fits right in because of two things: his passing and his cutting.
Oh yeah.
Last night he had six assists, or I should say Thursday night he had six assists. And comparing him to the guy who had that role last year, Jeremy Grant reached six assists or more only once in that entire season with the Nuggets. And that really stuck out both in the game against the Clippers, but also in the other two games he's played. It's not just the assist. He's also has some like hockey assists mixed in there. He just really keeps the ball moving. And then his cutting for a team who just loves to post up Nikola Jokic and let him do whatever he wants has really been incredible. I mean, he's getting multiple dunks per game just from amazing passes from Jokic. And then the last thing that obviously is sticking out with him is his athleticism. I think he just makes them a more dynamic team. So this all brings up the question, because before the trade deadline, you know, Denver was starting to play really well, as I mentioned, 13-3 in their last 16. I think it was completely normal to say that they were a contender. And yet now, after getting Aaron Gordon, I feel so much differently about them. And yet I would call them a contender in either scenario. So what do we really mean when we say a team is a contender? Because it almost reminds me of like the sixth man of the year or most improved player conversations where you just start naming everyone. Like, yeah, he's been pretty good too. And then what you saw in the last week, because I was reading some Denver blogs, is this delineation between contender status or quote unquote true contender status. And I kind of agree. Like, after seeing Denver this week, it does feel different. It does feel like I should think of them as a quote unquote true contender. But what does that mean? So like when you say a team is a contender, Andrew, what does that mean? Does that mean you think they could make the conference finals? Does that mean you think they could make the finals?
I think you have to be able to make the finals to be a contender, right? You have to, has to be some scenario where you can look at that team and say, yes, I believe that team can get through all the other teams in whichever conference and get to the finals.
And I would say the differentiation between contender and true contender, even if there should be one, is that I wouldn't be surprised if they made the finals.
Sure.
Because starting to look at the Western Conference, it is stacked.
It is
stacked.
And it's going to be great.
It's going to be amazing. And if you try to rank those top five or six teams, I mean, you could throw in Portland, you could even throw in Dallas. Like, you're going to have to put someone fifth on that list or someone fourth on that list.
Yeah.
And so if you're putting a team fourth or fifth on that list, do you really believe that they're a contender? I don't know. And so when I think about the teams that I would not be surprised if made the finals, I think of the Lakers if they're healthy.
Yeah.
I now think of the Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Jazz are like right there. Honestly, the only thing holding me back on the Jazz is just they haven't done it before. You know, we've never seen this team make a conference finals. So I guess I would be a little surprised if the Jazz made the finals, even though they've been so amazing this year. But then I get to the team like the Suns, and that's where it separates for me. Like, I actually would be surprised if the Phoenix Suns made the NBA Finals.
I would be shocked. It'd be a huge story.
Yeah, not, it would.
Yeah, yeah. And the story would be, can you believe the Phoenix Suns? You know, like, right. That's what it would be. That makes you not a contender. If the storyline is that, not a contender.
Okay, so we agree on that. So good, because I wanted to kind of break that down. Now, going forward, you know, what concerns might you have about the Nuggets? I think the concern would be the bench unit. We saw in the game against the Clippers, like, the Nuggets should have won that game going away. And Jokic didn't even have a good game, but then the bench came in. They get outscored 30-11. The good news is, in the playoffs, those rotations are going to tighten. Monty Morris has been out for the last 11 games. He's one of the best backup point guards in the league. And I do not necessarily want to see Campazzo in the playoffs, because he looks like the top type of guy who a team would target every single time down the court in the playoffs. Yeah. And then the other thing that we haven't seen yet, but which is available to them, is the JaVale edition. JaVale, I don't think, has played any minutes yet since they acquired him, but having that sort of a more athletic lob threat in that second unit, I think could help them a lot as well. So I'm just very excited about the Nuggets. This is a team last year I did not buy into. And, you know, maybe if Mike Conley makes a shot in the playoffs, I'm justified. But they go on to make the Western Conference Finals. It's an amazing run. Everyone feels differently about the Nuggets. But I still had questions, you know, is it just Bubble Murray? Is it just because of the bubble? This addition of Aaron Gordon has completely changed the way I think about this team going forward, in addition to the improved play of Michael Porter Jr., which I think something we haven't talked about, but another really important aspect.
Yeah, you got to have guys that can get buckets down the stretch, and I think they can. And I think I wouldn't be surprised to see them beat the Clippers again in the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised to see them beat the Suns or the Jazz. A fully healthy Lakers team, I would be surprised still. But we haven't seen a fully healthy Lakers team in a while. And are we going to have that come playoff time? I hope so, because you want to see everybody at their best. But let's say you don't. Let's say that Anthony Davis is like 60 or 70% of what he is. Then, heck yeah, the Nuggets have a chance to get to the NBA Finals. I mean, it is wild. And Aaron Gordon is – and he's not – it's funny because we're talking about like the fourth or fifth best guy on the team. But his importance is that he kind of glues everything together with his passing, with his defense, with his athleticism. He just helps make everything else work around him. And that's what, I mean, everybody's been talking about it for a long time. And people talked about it with him, with the Orlando Magic, that he is like similar to like a Draymond Green type of player. And we're starting to actually see that come to fruition in Denver. And it makes me wonder if other teams like the Boston Celtics should have put in a stronger bid for him.
Yeah, when you look at the return that Orlando got, or that the Magic had to give up, it doesn't seem that much in retrospect. And again, it's only been three games, but seems like an amazing deal for the Nuggets. Okay, Andrew, it is time for a birthday bash.
Blow out the candles, get your cake, and eat it too. It's the birthday bash.
It's your birthday.
Somebody in here, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
Somebody in here, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
Everybody move like it's your birthday.
Every week, I look up the players who had birthdays this week, and I give you two names. You tell me which guy is younger. After 5 weeks, Andrew, your overall record is 13-12. You are every Eastern Conference team. But this week may be the hardest of them all, Andrew, because no one was born this week. There were no babies. It was actually just very sparse, and I could only come up with one comparison for current players, so there's going to be some tougher ones this week. But to help you out, I'm going to let you know ahead of time that none of these guys are the same age, okay? So one guy will always be younger. Are you ready, Andrew?
I'm ready.
All right.
Let's do it.
So for current players, Mitchell Robinson, Max Strus.
Oh, my. I have no idea how old Max Strus is.
I didn't think you would.
I'll say Mitchell Robinson is younger.
That is correct. Mitchell Robinson turned 23. Max turned 25. Now in the category of random guys we liked in the mid-2000s, Gustavo Ayon, Andres Biedrins.
Oh, my. Oh, I think of Gustavo as an older-looking gentleman.
Okay.
So I'll say he's younger.
Well, you should have gone with your gut, Andrew, Gustavo turned 36 and Andres turned 35. All right, now in the current coaches category, Luke Walton, head coach of the Kings. David Vanterpool, assistant head coach for the Timberwolves.
Oh, Vanterpool's younger?
No, he's actually 7 years older. David Vanterpool is really? 48. Luke Walton is 41.
I have no feel for how old coaches are.
Well, get ready, because the next category, former coaches. Larry Drew, Byron Scott.
Oh, Larry Drew, younger?
Nope. Byron Scott, 3 years younger, turning 60 this week. Larry Drew turning 63. And finally, Andrew, media personalities, Steve Smith, Mark Jackson.
Steve Smith, younger.
Yes. Okay, you close it on a win. 52 years old this week, Steve Smith is. And Mark Jackson turning 56. So 2 out of 5, Andrew. Staying on your 500 pace.
That was rough. Rough with a really weird bunch. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but right after this, we're going to talk about the Utah Jazz.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out 6 pop culture themed trophies for 6 basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, Andrew, it is time for our favorite segment of the week, the Wheel of Fandom, the segment where each week we spin a digital wheel, it picks an NBA team, we follow that team for the next week and report back. This week, the Wheel of Fandom chose the Utah Jazz, 36-11, best record in the league, 4th in offensive efficiency, 3rd in defensive efficiency, winners of now 7 in a row. Now, what did we learn about the Jazz this week? Well, they are better than Memphis because Utah played Memphis 3 times and beat them every way you could. At home, on the road, a close game, a blowout, with Donovan Mitchell, without Donovan Mitchell, they also beat the Cavs. So, Andrew, if the Wheel Fandom chose the Utah Jazz, who is our guest this week?
It's my guy, Tony Jones. Tony, what's up?
What's up? How are you?
Good. We're glad you can join the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
First question, and I feel like this is especially a good question for you. What are your Twitter mentions like? Because the Utah Jazz fans are very online and very on Twitter.
They are, you know, the GIF where the dog is sitting in the chair and there's, you know, there's the fire and the flames around him and he's yeah. And the smoke and he says, "This is fine."
Is that you?
Those are my Twitter mentions daily. That's me looking at my Twitter mentions.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, how deep-seated are these, like, feelings of disrespect for Jazz fans?
They're pretty deep-seated. I actually think at this point that they have a few points. I think on Twitter, if you ask Twitter right now, I think the Jazz would be playoff underdogs against the Suns, the Nuggets, both Los Angeles teams. A toss up against the Mavericks.
a toss up against the Mavs.
And if they are the one seed, they definitely don't want to see New Orleans or Golden State.
Right.
So I think, like, I mean, on a regular basis, I'm just like, okay, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, if you look at NBA Twitter or whatever, you know, that's what I've seen on NBA Twitter. So, you know, and I'm just thinking, I'm like, you know, usually if you're 36-11, I mean, that's just kind of who you are. You're just kind of a really good team this year. And I don't think anybody believes in them come the playoffs.
Yeah, especially with a point differential of plus 9.3. Teams should be scared of that.
Yeah, yeah. They have that. I mean, I get it. I mean, you know, last year there was the bubble, and obviously they lost in the first round. They went through the Rockets years where the Rockets handled them. I don't agree. I think just from watching this team on a night to night basis, I think they're going to be a very tough out, and I think it's going to take a great series to beat them. With whoever. But, you know, I get where the skepticism comes from. I mean, you don't get respect at the playoff level unless you do it. Mm-hmm. And the Jazz just haven't done it yet, or at least this core hasn't.
So talking about some of those potential matchups, obviously this week we got a good long look at one potential first round matchup against the Memphis Grizzlies. Is there a team that Jazz fans would most like to avoid in the first round, or a team that's a consistent matchup problem for the Jazz in any way that they could see in that first round?
I don't agree with them, but I think Jazz fans are terrified of Golden State.
Really?
Yeah, because I think they have Steph Curry PTSD. And
sure. Okay.
You know,
understandable.
And one of Utah's worst performances of the season came against Golden State. You know, right after the All-Star break, they went up to San Francisco and you know, the Warriors played a really great game, and you know, the Jazz didn't, and Golden State beat them. I don't agree with that. I think the Jazz would beat the Warriors in five games pretty easily. I don't think they want to see, you know, Golden State in that eighth spot. I don't think that they want to see Dallas in that eighth spot. I'm talking about Jazz fans. Mm-hmm. I think Dallas is understandable. I think the Jazz are a lot better, but, you know, Luka and Porzingis, you know, that can still make it. They can still take a game or two off of Utah. I think they're confident against Memphis and San Antonio, and they don't want to see New Orleans because of their talent level.
Mm-hmm. Right. Looking more at like the other matchups later down the road, what is this team's biggest weakness? Because watching them over the course of this last week, I mean, there are moments where this team looks like a machine that was built to play basketball, all the passing, all the movement on offense, really impressive. What is their weakness if they have one at this point?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, their weakness is the same as their weakness last year, which is, you know, they're susceptible to elite perimeter scoring matchups. You know, this might sound sacrilegious, but I think the Jazz would have more issues with Jamal Murray in the playoffs than they would with Kawhi Leonard, because mm-hmm. they have a guy in Royce O'Neal who's good on the bigger forwards. You know, so they have to prove that they can guard a Jamal Murray. They have to prove that they can guard a Devin Booker or a Chris Paul, you know, once the postseason starts. And, you know, I think Denver is a scary matchup for Utah. Regardless, I mean, not a scary matchup, but it's one of the teams that I don't think the Jazz match up really well with stylistically, and styles make the fights. You know, so I think that, you know, taking the elite dynamic perimeter guy from, you know, the point guard or the small forward spot. I mean, point guard or shooting guard spot. You know, those are the guys that would really hurt the Jazz in a playoff series. You know, but other than that, I don't see many weaknesses. I mean, I think the Jazz are going to be able to score pretty consistently on anybody. I think they're going to, you know, I think in key spots, I think they'll be able to generate stops. You know, everybody talks about how good they are in terms of being a 3-point shooting team, but that's not, they're not a team that live and die by the three. You know, they can score inside the arc. They can score in the paint. They can score at the rim. So, nice. You know, they're a pretty versatile team offensively. They don't live and die by the three. They're pretty versatile offensively. You know, so it'll just be interesting to see how they react to playoff pressure once the playoffs get here.
Yeah. We talk about pressure and just the emotions that come with playing in the playoffs. The team has already been through a lot emotionally as a group. They were at the forefront of the pandemic. You had all the Gobert and Mitchell feuds, and does one want out, or who's it going to be? And then the team potentially breaking up. You even had, like, this week, you had the plane ride that was pretty wild. You can go read the story of that on The Athletic from Tony. And then even, like, down to, like, the Elijah Millsap tweet. It's like, it feels like this team has, like, been through almost everything on the emotional side. Do you think that better prepares them for a deep playoff run, or is that meaningless? Like, what, where do you land on that?
Well, it's definitely galvanized them as a group. You know, and it's, I did a story on Donovan Mitchell last month. And, you know, he talked about it, you know, is, you know, he was basically like, you know, screw the media. And then he says to me, well, no offense, Tony. And I said to him, and I say, no offense taken. The tape recorder is rolling. Please keep talking.
Right. Yeah. And, keep this going. Yeah, come on, man.
And, you know, but his overall point was, you know, hey, you know, you guys just came out with the story that said me and Rudy can't play together ever again. And we're going to go out and we're going to actively prove you wrong. We're going to fix this. Hmm. We're going to fix whatever is going on in our locker room. And, you know, we're going to be good. We're going to be fine. And they were. And, you know, it's a close group. It's a close-knit group. You know, like you said, I mean, they've had a lot of adversity over the past year. And, you know, they, you know, talked about the plane ride from this week. That was a really scary experience for them. You know, obviously a lot of stuff that went on off the floor in terms of the pandemic and the like. So, you know, this group has been through a lot, and they've had to deal with a lot that didn't have to do with basketball. And obviously, you know, we all know that it's a lot to deal with just dealing with basketball at the NBA level. So, you know, I don't know, you know, if it's going to help or hurt in the playoffs. I do know that it's helped during the regular season, because I think that this group is coming focused. It's been a group that's played with a chip on its shoulder for most, if not all, of the season. And, you know, and at least in the regular season, they've broken through the glass ceiling of being, hey, that's a pretty good team, to, you know, oh my goodness, the Jazz are an elite team, at least in the regular season.
Yeah. Quick follow up. How far do you see this team going? I know we still have a lot of basketball to play, but with the team as it's currently constructed, how do you see them faring in the West, and how far do you see them going?
Well, I can't look at a team and, you know, see 36-11 and, you know, not say, hey, that team's an NBA championship contender. You know, I wouldn't call them NBA title favorites, but I think they're in the group that have a chance to win the title. I actually think it's a fairly big group this year. I think, you know, I think you can put Utah, Denver, both LA teams at minimum in that group. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and you can put the Phoenix Suns in that group, because, you know, you don't want to go against Chris Paul at playoff time. So, you know, it's a deep group this year, especially in the Western Conference. You know, so I think if the Jazz get the number one seed, obviously I think they'll get out of the first round at least.
Sure.
You know, but they have to, you know, in the second round, it's going to be a great team. It's going to be either Denver, it's going to be one of the LA teams, or it's going to be Phoenix. It could be Portland. And if it's Portland, do you really want to see Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, you know, for seven games? I mean, so it's, there are no easy roads. So, you know, it's going to depend on Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And it's going to depend on how able they're able to, how well they're able to hold up defensively. You know, but it's, you know, so at least I can, at the very least, if they keep that one seed, I can forecast them into the second round.
All right. It is now time for everyone's favorite game show, Andrew versus the Beat, where we pit Andrew against a beat writer for the team that was picked by the Wheel of Fandom. Of course, this week it was the Utah Jazz. So our guest will be Tony Jones. Now, Tony, how this works, I have 8 trivia questions about the Jazz. You will get first pick. You will give me a number between 1 and 8. I will ask you that question. If you get it correct, you will get 2 points. If you don't get it correct, Andrew has a chance to steal for 1 point. We will go back and forth choosing trivia questions until all 8 have been answered. So, Tony, let's start with the first question. Give me a number between 1 and 8.
I'm going to take a nice round number in 4.
Okay, this is a fun one. In 2019, Rudy Gobert set an NBA record for most dunks in a season with 306 dunks. According to Basketball Reference, since the 1996-97 season, the first year that dunks were tracked, Rudy Gobert is one of only 7 NBA players who have had at least 200 dunks in a season at least twice in their career. So we're going to go back and forth naming who the other 6 dunkers were. So first, Tony, you're going to give me a name of a dunker who has had at least 200 dunks twice in a season.
DeAndre Jordan.
That is correct. He did it 5 times. Andrew.
Dwight Howard.
That is correct. He also did it 5 times.
So that was quick.
I know.
Andrew, I thought you were gonna have to think about that for a minute. Blake Griffin.
Blake Griffin has done it twice. That is correct. Woo. Back to Andrew.
Sean Kemp.
That is incorrect. And Andrew, I cannot believe you lost this question.
Oh, I cannot believe I lost it too.
Shaq.
I am mad.
Shaquille O'Neal.
I am straight up mad at myself.
All right, Andrew, choose a number between 1 and 8.
1.
Can you recover? No, you will not recover on this one. Okay. Who was the most recent Jazz player to record a triple-double in the playoffs?
I guess Rudy Gobert is the only one I can think of, but I don't think that's right.
That is incorrect. Tony, do you want to give him the correct answer?
It's Ricky Rubio.
And who did he do it against?
Ricky Rubio. No, he did not.
Yeah, he did.
No.
He, of course, did it against the Oklahoma City
He did
Thunder.
It against Mr. Triple-Double himself.
He did.
Oh, Andrew, this is a really rough start.
He was so polite and kind afterwards, too, about it. Yep.
Okay, Tony, it is your turn, so you get to pick a number between 1 and 8. We've already chosen number 1 and number 4.
Number 3.
Okay, number 3. From 1984 to 2003, the Utah Jazz made the NBA playoffs every single season. Interestingly, they were not the only team to do this, however. In fact, another team accomplished the same feat during the exact same time frame, making the playoffs in all 20 seasons. Who was that team?
Is it the Sonics?
That is incorrect. Andrew, the chance to steal. Who was the other team to make the playoffs every single year, 84 to 03?
Is it the Pistons?
Pistons is incorrect. It was my hometown, Portland Trail Blazers.
That was seriously my next pick.
Interesting.
Isn't that that's a pretty good one. They actually did it for 21 straight seasons. They started in 83. Okay, Andrew, you get to pick the next one.
Number seven.
Okay, Andrew, this is a fun one. The musical artist Prince once rented the Los Angeles home of this Utah jazz player. Prince quickly made the home his own, transforming two bedrooms into a fully functional hair salon and massage parlor, turning the weight room into a dance floor with a DJ booth, installing black carpet throughout the house, painting the walls purple, and adding a purple heart-shaped bed to the master bedroom. When the Utah Jazz player saw his new home, he was furious and almost sued Prince. Who was the Utah Jazz player?
Carlos Boozer.
That is correct. For 2 points.
I did know that.
Did he really? Did Carlos Boozer really do this?
Yes, and there's a great article on The Undefeated about this. Go look it up. It is so funny.
Yeah.
All the things that Prince did to his house. And he was just renting it for 1 year. And Prince basically, when Carlos called him, was like, hey, everything will be fine by the time my lease is up. And it was. Like, he completely re-renovated the house to make it look the exact same as it was initially.
Unbelievable.
Okay, Tony, it is your turn.
Number eight.
All right, number eight. Ooh, this is the toughest one, in my opinion.
Mike
Conley holds the current record for most games played without a technical foul at 873 games. Interestingly, the second longest streak for games played without a technical foul is held by this Jazz player.
I'm going to say Jeff Hornacek.
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal for 1 point.
Mehmet Okur. I have no idea.
He did play for the Jazz. No, it was Andre Kirilenko, AK-47. All right, Andrew, it is your turn. You are currently down 3-2. You could pull ahead here.
Six.
Another music question, Andrew. You've picked both of the music questions. Daryl Griffith, nicknamed Dr. Dunkenstein, is the only Jazz player to win Rookie of the Year for the Jazz and was one of the participants in the first ever slam dunk contest in 1984. His brother gave him the nickname Dr. Dunkenstein in reference to the song Dr. Funkenstein by this 1970s band. Who is the band?
Oh my gosh. True. Earth, Wind, and Fire? I have no idea.
It's a solid guess, but it's incorrect. Tony, any guesses for you? Dr. Funkenstein.
Dr. Funkenstein, I'm going to say the Parliament.
That is correct. It was Parliament.
Tony! Let's go!
Wow.
You know, they was into all of that, you know, we want the funk, you know, all that stuff. So I just threw it out there.
Wow.
All right. Tony has pulled ahead to a 4-2 lead, and he gets the next question.
Number two.
All right, number two. In 2010, EA Sports acquired the rights to the NBA Jam franchise and released the first NBA Jam in 6 years. In the game, there were three Jazz players available to play. Deron Williams, Andre Kirilenko, and this player.
It wasn't Carlos Boozer?
That is incorrect. He was actually, he signed with the Chicago Bulls that summer. So he was not on the roster. Andrew, any guesses?
Chris Humphries. I have no idea.
Chris Humphries?
Nope. I know.
No, Tony, who is it?
CJ Miles.
Also incorrect. It's actually a name Andrew said earlier. It was Mehmet Okur. Everyone's favorite player to play with in video games. Okay. Well, Andrew, you have a chance to tie, Andrew, with the final question.
Okay.
Final question. Now, this happened last week. You had a chance to tie on the final question, and you couldn't pull it out. Let's see if you can do it this time.
Okay.
This Hall of Famer was drafted by the Utah Jazz, but was traded before his rookie season because of financial concerns and because the Jazz wanted to play him at power forward, which he did not want to do. Who is the Hall of Famer?
Bro, this is easy. Andrew, you got to get this.
Oh, now the pressure's on. I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Who was it, Tony?
I'm just going to go ahead and steal this. 1982 from University of Georgia, Dominique Wilkins.
That is correct.
That is wild.
I know. I never knew that story. I don't know how I never knew that. It was terrible. It's like one of the worst trades of all time. It was two guys who were out of the league in 3 years. I don't even remember their names.
Turns out Dominique was right.
Yeah, Dominique was right. But an impossible scenario to get through. Like, what? We have to trade you. Unreal.
Oh, you don't want to play the four? Out you go, buddy.
Weird thought.
Because he did an interview recently, and he was like, yeah, in retrospect, it kind of would have been awesome to play with Stockton and Malone and have Dominique Wilkins on the same team.
Goodness gracious.
He had Ricky Green, and he had Daryl Griffith and Adrian Dantley on. They would have won a title.
No.
Well, congratulations to Tony Jones, who beat Andrew on this week's version of Andrew versus the Beat. Congrats, Tony.
Thank you. I'm going to go and get a balloon to celebrate.
Tony, thanks so much for coming on the Saturday Slam and Jam. We appreciate you. We'll be reading all your stuff on The Athletic. Hope you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
All right, Andrew, it's that time again. Time to spin the wheel of fandom and see which team we are going to get for the next week. Any guesses before I spin it, Andrew?
Oh, give me the Sixers. All got right. Joel Embiid back. Come on.
Let's see what we get. Wheel of Fandom, turn. The team this week will be the Los Angeles Clippers.
Okay, Clippers.
Very interesting time.
We can do this.
I told you yesterday, if the Clippers had won that game against the Nuggets last night, they would have been my most interesting thing of the week. Because I do think there's some underratedness to the Clippers going on right now.
Yeah, I am really glad that you didn't also do the Clippers this week and do back-to-back Clippers weeks. So we'll have Law Murray on, who's wonderful, and it's going to be should be a really fun show. So please tune in next week. Thanks so much for listening to the Saturday Slam and Jam. You can follow Alex on Twitter at AlBabyCakes. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew K. Schlecht. Be sure to listen to the Basketball Buds. That will drop on Monday. Enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you guys again next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.